First, he threatened murder.
I've got a gun in my hand. Do you understand?
Then there was a murder.
Whoever had done it had been almost a maniac.
Call me Charles Manson, big 3-inch letters, front page.
He was convicted and put away for life, but he always claimed his innocence and was determined to prove it.
He literally solved his own murder case from prison.
He convinced them that, wait a minute, we have an innocent man here.
On the night of May 23rd, 1991, a fire broke out in a rural farmhouse in upstate New York. By the time firemen got there, it was entirely engulfed in flames.
They realized that the occupant, Sabina Kulikowski, was missing. Daylight was coming, and then they, firemen and others, were basically looking for her.
Emergency workers found Sabina Kulikowski's body about 100 yards from the house on an overgrown footpath.
She was naked. She had been brutally murdered, stabbed, beaten, burned, bitten.
Sabina was 49 years old.
It became pretty obvious right away that whoever had done it is somebody that, quite honestly, had to have been almost a maniac.
The evidence showed that she was in the house when the fire started.
At some point, Sabina was alive in or about the structure when it was burning because she did have some soot in her lungs.
Between the farmhouse and Sabina's body, police found a red T-shirt stained with Sabina's blood. Fire investigators found traces of accelerant inside the house and quickly ruled the blaze an arson. Investigators thought the crime was one of passion.
Rage, pure rage, perhaps motivated by a desire to get revenge.
Sabina Kulikowski lived in the farmhouse alone. Her boyfriend, Ron Bench, lived there with her until they broke up a few months before the fire.
By all accounts, it was an amicable breakup, and they remained friends. They continued to associate with one another, but they had ended their boyfriend-girlfriend relationship.
Ron Bench had an alibi for the night of the fire. He was in Auburn, New York, an hour's drive away, and friends corroborated his alibi. And police had another suspect. Sabina was a social worker for the state of New York. Her superiors were dealing with a disgruntled man who threatened to kill everyone in the office unless he was given custody of his daughter.
He was angry with the Child Protective Agency because they had placed his daughter in foster care, and he did not like that.
I want her back, and I've been using the method, and I've been using the system, and I've been paying attorneys. But I think that if I got a gun in my hand again, then you'll understand what the I'm all about. A crazy man comes in there and just starts taking them social service workers out for the hell of it and kills himself. Can't put a dead man in jail, can you? Can you?
Roy Brown spent 6 months in jail for making those threats and was released just 6 days before Sabina's murder.
His alibi was that he was with his girlfriend the entire night, and he gave a name and gave a location where they were, and they checked on it and found out that his girlfriend actually was in jail that night. So he obviously was lying to them about his whereabouts.
Brown denied any involvement, but he was arrested for arson and murder.
Called me up the day before. Said, we're going to come over and arrest you. I said, come on. Are you guys serious? And they come over to arrest me, all right? 10 o'clock in the morning, would you? Sure, come pick me up for a murder charge. Yeah. Then I had to sit on the porch because they're 15 minutes late.
Roy Brown was the prime suspect in the murder of Sabina Kulikowski. He earned that distinction by threatening to kill everyone in Sabina's office due to a child custody dispute.
Roy was not a good guy. Roy had anger management issues. He did have a criminal record. Nothing of any great consequence, but enough so that, you know, it's not the kind of guy that you'd want to really hang out with necessarily. He was involving himself in some bad activities as far as, you know, drinking and whatever else. And he had no real alibi for where he was at that point.
Brown insisted he had nothing to do with the arson or Sabina's murder. But the circumstantial evidence was compelling. Brown was offered a plea bargain, but refused.
I told him to go screw themselves. You know, I told the one lawyer, I didn't do anything wrong. He said, well, it doesn't matter. They're going to send you to prison anyways.
So Roy Brown went on trial. Prosecutors found two witnesses who said Brown was physically abusive.
Roy Brown's wife and a girlfriend, both of them stated under oath that he was a biter. They said when he was angry, he would bite them, and he used biting as a form of trying to control them.
Coincidentally, Sabina Kulikowski was bitten before she was killed, and prosecutors asked a forensic odontologist to compare the bite marks to Brown's teeth.
Roy Brown's bite pattern matched some of the bite marks on Sabina's body.
But the forensic odontologist hired by the defense claimed the opposite. He said the bite wounds on Sabina's body were created by someone with six front upper teeth, and Brown didn't have them.
And he was very clear and very adamant in regard to excluding Roy as the person who left those bite marks.
The jury sided with the prosecution and convicted Roy Brown of Sabina's murder. He was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison.
There was no real evidence that Roy Brown knew Sabina Kulikowski, much less where she lived.
When Brown got to his prison cell, he refused to sleep on the bed because he said it belonged to a killer, not him.
I told him that when I went in the first night. I'll sleep on the floor. That bed don't belong to me. That's my desk. I turned it into an office desk. And their mattress, I took an old belt, an old piece of string, and I made a chair out of it and sat it down. That's my law school.
Brown filed several appeals, and all were denied. Yet, he continued to work to clear his name.
You can't get into the law library unless you bribe somebody or pay somebody, because the first thing they're going to do is beat the hell out of you for being there, just to make sure that you know who's in charge.
Brown also told his lawyer, I'm learning a lot from TV shows, like Forensic Files.
I studied law books, appeals in other cases, forensic science, anything I could try to utilize to prove my innocence.
Brown petitioned the court for DNA testing of the saliva found on Sabina's T-shirt, but this request too was denied.
I don't know who said the wheels of justice are turned slowly, but they are flat. And I'm fixing to jack them up, change the tires, and throw a new spare in the trunk.
It had to be discouraging, and I would think that it would, you know, could very end up saying, I've had enough.
Then something fortuitous happened. After spending 12 years in prison, a fire broke out in Brown's parents' home, destroying all 570 pages of his case file. And that fire changed the course of the investigation. 12 years after his murder conviction, Roy Brown learned that a fire in his parents' home destroyed his copies of his case file, all 570 pages. Undeterred, Brown wanted to replace it using what little money he had.
So he went and paid his, 15 cents a page that he's entitled to under law, and through the state's Freedom of Information Law obtained these statements.
Brown requested duplicate copies of everyone who gave statements to police during the murder investigation.
I think it was like $28.50 I had to send him from jail. I only made like $4 every 2 weeks. $4.20.
The sheriff's office sent Brown a list of everyone the police interviewed. And that's when Brown realized there were four affidavits in the file he had never seen before.
Roy got the list, looked at it, and said, wait a minute, what are all these statements? You know, who are all these people whose statements I've never seen before?
There were several statements from Barry Bench and his wife Tammy Heisner, who were part owners of the farmhouse that burned down when Sabina Kulikowski lived there. Tammy told police that Barry behaved suspiciously when they got to the fire scene.
Why are we stopping here?
Look around and see if you see any evidence.
Like what?
Like, I don't know, just look.
She claimed he wanted to search an area 100 yards from the farmhouse.
We had parked down the street from the farm, and he had mentioned to me that maybe we should go on down by the car and start back up on opposite sides of the road looking for evidence or something, you know, just to see if there was anything amiss or whatever.
DeRoy Brown, this was a critical piece of information. Sabina Kulikowski's body was discovered in that same area around daybreak.
They're still battling the blaze, you know, and he's not even up there helping. You know, he's walking down the road looking way over here. If he was so concerned, why wouldn't he be looking up there?
And Barry claimed he had an alibi for the time the fire started. He said he was drinking in a local bar until 1:30 in the morning. But a bar patron claimed Bench left the bar around midnight.
He was unaccounted for about an hour and a half.
My reporting on Barry Bench showed that he had, as I understood it, quite a temper.
Barry Bench had a prior arrest and misdemeanor conviction for physically assaulting a young girl who later got a restraining order against him.
One neighbor that I interviewed said that she actually worked with him and was afraid of him. He had a problem with women, according to this woman.
So taking matters into his own hands, Brown wrote a letter to Barry Bench accusing him of murder.
Attention, Barry Bench. I will easily get a court order to obtain samples from you for DNA testing. After such a f***ed up thing you did to kill that lady, Sabina Kulikowski, and my false imprisonment for over a dozen years, I still pray for you. I pray not only that you confess to killing Sabina Kulikowski, I pray you confess to all your sins and mark my words. They will eventually find out your guilt. Have a Merry Christmas, but don't count on a Happy New Year.
Brown hoped that Bench might reply and lick the envelope flap, in effect, sending his DNA sample. Instead, Bench walked in front of an oncoming Amtrak train and killed himself.
Well, actually, I was kind of ticked off because I figured this got away. How am I going to go to court and get a test on this guy now he's dead?
Brown needed to find another way to get Bench's DNA. He was so desperate, he considered stealing it.
I was trying to have my family go to the funeral and clip his fingernails and cut his hair while he was in the box. Figure out a way to get some DNA from him. When you're where I was at, measures become desperate. And consequences for getting caught don't mean anything when you're serving life for something you didn't do.
For 12 years, Roy Brown sat in prison for Sabina Kulikowski's murder. After failing to get a new trial, Brown contacted the Innocence Project in New York, asking them for help.
The Innocence Project was founded a little over 15 years ago to help convicted prisoners use what was then a new technology, DNA testing, to prove that they were wrongfully convicted and innocent of the crimes for which they were in prison.
The Innocence Project accepted Brown's case. While doing some research, the Innocence Project learned that before Brown's trial, prosecutors consulted Dr. Lowell Levine, a well-known forensic odontologist, but chose not to call him as a witness.
We were for the first time given documents showing that the state's own expert, Dr. Lowell Levine, had reached some very significant conclusions that cast enormous doubt on Roy's guilt before his case ever went to trial.
Well, I never finished my analysis. In my notes, in fact, I have one note on one of the photographs that if what I was looking for, if what I thought was an upper was in fact an upper, I would exclude Mr. Brown.
So the Innocence Project petitioned the court for permission to test the victim's red T-shirt found at the crime scene, thinking it might contain saliva.
It's not impossible to find DNA after a 15-year case, but it makes it a little bit more difficult.
Analyst Tim Goble examined the shirt with an alternate light source. Saliva and some other biological materials will fluoresce when hit with this light.
There were a number of fluorescent stains on the T-shirt, and some of them were near the markings that were made by the previous examiner.
Not surprisingly, the stains were near the bite holes, an indication they were left by the person who bit the victim, presumably her killer. Goble removed the fabric and performed STR DNA testing, which is a more advanced form of PCR testing. The result? The DNA profile from the saliva on the T-shirt did not match Roy Brown. But whose was it? Barry Bench's daughter, Catherine Ekstad, offered to help out.
His daughter was a very courageous young woman who said, I want the truth. I want to know if my father committed this murder and if Roy Brown is innocent. She actually contacted us after our papers were filed in court originally and said, if you ever need me, I'll give you a DNA sample.
The DNA analysis confirmed what Roy Brown already knew, that the saliva stains on Sabina Kulikowski's T-shirt had come from Barry Bench.
The paternity testing showed that the John Doe DNA on the shirt came from the father of this young woman, Catherine Ekstad, who was Barry Bench's daughter.
Unbelievably, when this evidence was presented to the court, the judge refused to grant a new trial. He said he had no proof that Barry Bench was Catherine's biological father.
You would think you'd be home the next day. You wouldn't think people would drag this out.
This is what kind of people I'm dealing with.
With pressure mounting, the state of New York eventually exhumed Barry Bench's body and took a DNA sample. It conclusively matched the saliva on Sabina Kulikowski's T-shirt. And Roy Brown was finally released from prison 15 years to the day he was convicted.
And I was thinking to myself, I got victory. See, I proved my innocence. Without any doubt, I showed I didn't do it, and I showed somebody else did do it. Okay? They can't take that from me. You know what I'm saying? They can't say open their mouth anymore about anything.
I made it very clear to Roy Brown that I regretted very much the situation that he found himself in.
But the question remains, why did Barry Bench murder Sabina Kulikowski? Barry Bench and Sabina were acquaintances. Sabina lived with Barry's brother, Ron, until they broke up a month before the fire. According to friends, Barry Bench was in financial trouble and may have wanted to sell the farmhouse where Sabina was staying. No one knows what happened that night. But the forensic evidence shows Barry went to the farmhouse to speak with Sabina.
What are you doing here?
There was an argument, and things turned violent.
No, no.
The theory is that Barry set fire to the farmhouse and was about to leave when he realized that Sabina wasn't dead. There was another fight outside. By this time, he couldn't take her body back into the farmhouse. The fire was too advanced. So he dragged her body to the footpath 100 yards away and left her there.
Why
This explains why Barry searched that area later after firefighters arrived. He wanted to make sure she was dead.
I have never had a case where the client solved his own crime from behind his prison cell using nothing but a pen and paper. He really did all the hard work.
DNA evidence, more often than not, convicts people. But it can also exonerate them. And now I think what the case of Roy Brown serves as an example of the fact that prosecutors and police now must be more thorough. They can't just, you know, be focused on one individual and that's it.
Is they locked me up and they made me turn a cell into an office, a bed into a desk, and a mattress into a chair. In law books, I use them instead of weapons. I use that pen and that typewriter. I beat the with their own sticks. See, fifth grade education goes a long way when you're playing with a bunch of corrupt. They can't even frame anybody, right? That's how stupid them college geniuses are.